I'm Florian, and I'm working for a company called Gute Frage, which you probably might not know, because we're only working on the German market, and we're running a question and answer platform, something like Quora or Stack Exchange. But on the German market, we are actually the biggest company there. And we have a reach of nearly half the population of Germany. So we do have issues with scaling and some challenges there. And so let me take you back to where we started 9 years ago. So it was the time where AWS hasn't really started yet. So and in Germany we also have this issue called data privacy law. So we decided to run on dedicated hardware machines. So we started very small with an PHP and MySQL stack on one rented machine, and everything was nice because it was so small. And then we were a lucky startup, so we grew. So it didn't take that long until we have the challenge to add more machines, and that was the time where we started buying the first own servers. We went to a data center and leased racks there, and we could put the machines there and do some distribution of the applications and having a known database cluster, and things were getting a little bit more complex over the time. Well, that's nothing new probably. And then if you're growing even more, then you might end up like chaos. So we still have a PHP cluster, and then we have an even bigger MySQL cluster, and then someone comes and says, we need a RabbitMQ, and now we need a recommendation engine, and of course we need Redis, although we also have Memcache for caching, but we need both. And things went very complex. And that was the time where we also started to move away from PHP to a more service-oriented architecture based on Scala and Finagle. And so we also had a challenge to start those services somewhere. And we decided back at the time that it was a good thing, maybe, to have one instance of a service running on one virtual machine, to have it somehow isolated. We didn't think that through at that time. So another thing with such an static partitioning of your hardware is that you what happens when machines fail? And we heard enough that machines are always failing. So for example, if one of the two machines of the recommendation engine fails, we can't meet our SLAs anymore. But we have enough resources somewhere else where we could easily spin up another recommendation instance. So we sat there and said, oh, that doesn't feel right. Wouldn't it be awesome to have all the machines in one single cluster? And we don't want to take care of a single machine because it's just a machine. We want to have the processes running, but we don't want to take care about where it's running. So we looked around how other big companies are doing it. We are quite small. We have 15 engineers and like 3 ops guys who are also, why I don't know, taking care of the office IT and the office network and doing, I'm not sure, I think we're even brewing coffee. We need to see or investigate how big companies are doing it, and we have the hope that if something works for a big company, it also works for our scale. So we found something called Mesos, and there are a couple of companies who are already using it. So I'm not sure how Netflix is using it, but Airbnb is using it for mostly, I think, for something like cron-style jobs. And Twitter is actually running one of the biggest Mesos cluster with tens of thousands of nodes. And Apple has, I think, 3 weeks ago announced that their newest architecture of Siri is running on Mesos as well, with about over 1,000 nodes. So Mesos is something that's already production battle-proofed, and we had a closer look into it. So how does Mesos actually work, or how does the infrastructure look there? And it actually consists of three or four parts. You have a master. That's the thing that's taking care about the resources you have in your cluster. To make it more robust and stable, you normally have more masters. Like, I think Twitter and Apple are running 5 masters for the big clusters, so it seems to scale out as well. And then you have a zookeeper where the masters are doing their synchronizing and the master election. And it's also fine if you run a big cluster on like only 5 zookeeper machines. On the other hand, we have the slaves, and the slaves are the actual working horses where the tasks are running, where your instances get spun up. But you also need another thing called scheduler, because Mesos itself is pretty useless unless you have something that takes care of the scheduling. And there, here in this example, there are two schedules for Hadoop and the message passing interface. I will show you some more later. And how does the actual allocation of resources work in Mesos? It's like this, that a slave is going to the master and says, here, I'm a slave, I'm a machine, I have 4 CPUs, I have 4 gigs of RAM, tell me what to do with it. So the master notes that down and goes to the frameworks, to the schedulers, and says, here, I have resources, do you need some resources? And then the framework says, okay, I have a job where I need to run maybe multiple tasks. So the framework tells the master, here I have task 1 that only needs 1 CPU or 2 CPUs, but only 1 gig of RAM. It should run on the resource you offered me from slave 1, and also task 2, which has some other requirements, but it should also run on the same slave. And then the master says to the slave, here, I have this list started up, and it provides the rest of the resources to the other framework. So the other frameworks can say, yeah, I probably need also some resources as well. There are actually 2 types of data a slave can send to the master. That's one, resources, and resources are something you can consume, something like CPUs, memory, or the TCP ports on a machine. So that's all consumable resources. But you also have something called attributes. Attributes are more fixed to the machine, and it can be for example, the disk type. So if you have SSDs in a machine, or it can be the rack ID in which rack the machine is living. And these information, so these resources and attributes, are also included in the offers the frameworks get. This is a list of example list of some framework that are already existing for Mesos. Some are more like a proof of concept, and some are more battle-proof. But for example, I think Jenkins is used by eBay to provide a developer-owned Jenkins instance for every developer. So and something like Spark. And Spark was a framework that first only supported Mesos. Then later came Yarn, stuff like that. So There are two interesting things are missing. One is called Myriad, which became an incubation project not long ago from Apache. And it's a project from Mesosphere, MapR, and eBay to bring more the Hadoop and Mesos world together by letting the YARN scheduler run on atop of Mesos. So the resources are managed by Mesos, but you still have your YARN compatible program. And the other interesting thing is called Mesos, which was announced and open source from Twitter not too long ago. And it's a framework that aims to provide a fault-tolerant, scalable MySQL cluster on Mesos and has as a persistent storage HDFS where the backups are done, and it also has this automatic failover from masters and stuff like that. It was open source, I think, last week, and it's very alpha, I would say. But it sounds promising. Now, we chose one framework we wanted to go with. It was not Aurora in the first place, and we failed very fast with it. So we now ended up with Aurora as a scheduler for the work we are doing with Mesos. And that's the official description of Aurora, what it's doing. So Aurora has some nice features that are worth looking at, like and built-in discovery via ZooKeeper. Every instance you start up on Aurora is automatically inserted into a ZooKeeper node. And so if you want to find the service instances you are running on Aurora, you don't have to go through a load balancer. It can be fetched into the client, so you don't have another hop by going through a load balancer or stuff like that. So and via the watchers in ZooKeeper, you have automatically a notification if a new service spins up or a service goes down. Another thing are rolling updates and rollbacks on Aurora. It's nearly the same as you might have heard in the Kubernetes talk. So new instances are spun up. Then there's a grace period where Aurora looks at the instance and does the health checks. And only if the new instance is really up and running, it goes on to the next. And if there's something failing, it automatically rolls back to the old version. And I've mentioned the attributes before, so Aurora can use them to define some constraints to your jobs. So in this example, I can say, I want a rec limit of 2. So this means that the job I'm running is only allowed to run with 2 instances on a single rec, so to make sure that my job is distributed over more recs. Or I could say host limit 2, so that only 2 instances are of the same job are allowed on one machine. And I can even define the attributes like the disk type there, so or the operating system. So if I have a job that needs to run on CentOS, I can define that. I have some screenshots how the interface looks like of Aurora, because the main work is done via command line. So we love command line. Everything is fine. If you're more a programmer, you can use either a Thrift API or a REST interface. But for a quick look how the cluster, how your instances are looking, you can have a look on the web interface where you easily see, I have a service, it's running in 9 instances, everything is fine. And you can also, what I haven't mentioned really yet, is the ability to run cron jobs on Aurora, which is pretty easy. You have the schedule, and it says when the next job should run and what's the state of the old jobs. Interesting here might be the collision policy, because what happens if you have a cron job that should run every 5 minutes, but the job is actually taking like 10 minutes. So you can either say, yeah, kill the existing job and start a new one, or you can say, okay, let the old job run and just cancel the new job. Just wait till the old one has finished. And then you have the ability to look more detailed into one job, or actually one instance of a job, where you can see, for example, the automatically assigned TCP ports for this kind of service. And you see on which machine it's running. You can have a look in the sandbox directory. What's happened there? You can have the standard out and standard error if you're not logging centrally. And here you also see that you can have more processes in one single job. So if you remember the Kubernetes talk, you have also the ability to run parallel processes like the Git syncer and the web server. And here, in this example, we have a sequential process list. So what we do is, when we start up, we fetch our jar file from the service to the sandbox. We fetch the config from HDFS to the sandbox, and then we start it up. So it's only sequential, but we could also maybe add an parallel process that is somehow taking care of the service or whatever. So now we have a software, or actually two pieces, that helps Twitter, Apple, whoever, to run a distributed system on a very large scale. So as I said before, we are very low scaled. We actually run Mesos on 10 nodes. So it's very small. But here's the question, does it help us? And yes, it does, because it provides us the flexibility of having not to take care of any machines anymore. We can easily spin up new services. We can easily spin up new instances. And it also provides us the speed. So when we had this instances or the services running on VMs, we had this really bad big VMs, which took us down somehow, because the performance is bad, and in a VM you have a lot of stuff you don't really need. So with Mesos you have just a simple sandbox where we put our jar file into it. It's isolated, or it can be isolated, with standard Linux C groups, and everything is fine there and very lightweight. And it's now the basic building block of our continuous deployment pipeline. We are doing a pretty default deployment pipeline. So it's Jenkins is building the stuff. We do a canary deployment to see how the new version looks like, how it behaves. Then we do some tests against the canary, and if everything works fine, we do the production deployment. So pretty standard. But with this kind of methodology, we reduced our deployment time from about 30 minutes to get it on the VMs and everything there to about 10 minutes. And we are doing now 100 deploys a day, about. So every commit a developer is doing is immediately pushed, or after the test, immediately pushed to our Mesos cluster. There are a couple of things beside Myriad and Mises that are going on currently, which could somehow be combined with Mesos. So, of course, Docker. I mean, I don't feel complete somehow if I don't say Docker in a talk. I have the feeling. We don't use Docker right now because we don't need it. We, as I said before, we have a single jar file. Everything is included into it. We don't need a container because it's already container-like enough. But for other things, I think Docker might be a good fit. And the other thing would be what would be nice to have is CoreOS on the Mesoslaves, because yeah, it's still the Mesoslave is still a machine you have to take care of. So you have to make the updates and stuff like that. And with CoreOS, at least it sounds like it might be a good fit if you have this automatic reboots and installation of updates. So this would mean even less work for the slaves or for taking care of the slaves. And if you're now thinking about, okay, should I use Kubernetes or should I use Mesos, you don't really have to make this decision because there's a project which tries to implement the Kubernetes API on Mesos. So you have Kubernetes with all this nice stuff like the labels and the load balancers. And the resource allocation is done via Mesos. So you have both. And yeah, so what I wanted to show you is that even a small team can really use a lot of those software the big companies are doing, and we can gain a lot of those open source projects. So yeah, awesome.
Hey, thanks, Florian. Any questions? I'll try and do it halfway first.
Hey. So thanks, Florian. Great talk. Two questions. Utilization. Did you measure, like, how was the aggregate utilization on those 10 nodes before and after? Were they existing servers you had, or did you deploy them
actually,
densely?
We are still having those VM hosts we are running because the master and the zookeeper we are still running on VMs because it doesn't make sense for us yet to have them on dedicated machines. So this nodes we have for the Mesoslaves are actually new ones. And yeah, the utilization is not good enough, I would say. It can be better, of course. But it's fine now. What we are not using right now, which is really bad, we don't use the resource isolation via C groups. So we define in our config files, okay, this instance has .2 CPUs, but it doesn't matter because it's not really isolated. So if someone would go to this isolation thing, we would be able to better see how things are doing. Yeah, if someone the instances get completely shut down because they are over quota.
Cool. Second part, for the Mesos slaves, you mentioned the kind of resources and attributes that it can advertise.
Yeah.
I didn't see kind of network capacity within there. So if you have a cluster of, you know, older machines, newer machines with 1 gig NICs, 10 gig NICs, and you're constrained at top of rack, you might have a ton of memory and even local storage available, but you know, you're going to be constrained by the network. How is that handled, do you know?
So you're right that currently the network isolation isn't really part of Mesos. I'm not sure what's the work there? I think it's possible we are C groups to do some isolation there. And another thing is the storage part. And the storage part is completely missing right now in Mesos. There's some work currently done to have something that provides persistent storage, but it's not ready yet. So, for example, we use this thing like HDFS for storage where we can fetch the stuff to the local machine or do the backups there. But of course, you even if an instance is running right now in a sandbox, you are not really confined to the sandbox. So if you mount some shared file system outside of the sandbox, you could have access to this shared resources. And if you have something like Ceph, maybe then the limitations of the rack are not so important anymore.
Cool. Thanks.
So, how would you stop? Suppose you had an important front-end web server running on a machine which tragically died, and so the web server had to be run on some other machine, but everything is full. So presumably something will get evicted. How do you make sure that it's random cron jobs and not your extremely expensive to reset up database?
So in Aurora, there's something like you have different environments called production, tests, and staging, but they are not really that important. There's a flag called production. And you have to define a quota for production resources. So in Aurora, you say, OK, I have this 70 CPUs dedicated to production jobs. So everything what's not production can be somehow scheduled, but make sure that these resources are always there for this kind of jobs. Yeah.
OK, we have time for a couple more questions.
Okay, so how about managing the Mesos cluster, like updating parts of the Mesos components, and any war stories there, any downtime introduced by bugs?
Of course it works. So we started with version .6, are running right now on .7, and last week was released .8, so we didn't have much experience, or don't have much experience with updating. But I heard from Twitter that they are trying to have it very painless. So you just evict the machine, do the upgrade to a new version, and it can still communicate with the old ones or the master. Yeah, you upgrade the master, and the old machines can still talk with the new masters, and then you do a step-by-step migration. So, yeah, it should work.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, if not, Florian, thank you.